papers to be presented. So, restrooms are over there. Everybody get comfortable. We'll do more music machines later. You're going to be back up here for dinner later. There's lots more stuff to show you, but I don't want to overwhelm you in one dose. Everybody's getting seated. Okay, here's Patrick Feaster.
That last selection was highly appropriate for our first speaker here, since he comes to us from Vienna along the beautiful Blue Danube. Helmut Kovar studied musicology and the history of the arts and laws at the University of Vienna. Since 1979, he's worked as a musicologist at the Phonogrammarchiv of the Austrian Academy of Sciences. He's carried out several field projects on urban anthropology and focused on the documentation of musical automata and research into their music. And I was familiar with some of his articles that he's written urging musicologists and ethnomusicologists to take these machines seriously as sources of information about musical traditions and the like. So it's been a real pleasure to meet him in person. Here's Helmut Kovar.
Thank you very much for this very nice introduction. Thanks. What a great location to give a paper about these things. Mechanical instruments and sound recordings store music, but the encoding of the musical data is different. With musical automata, the carrier of information is a program especially designed to activate mechanisms which play a musical instrument. The carrier of sound recordings represents an image of the acoustic events depicted as waves in analog or digitized form. Mechanical musical instruments and sound recordings may be viewed as very close relatives when it comes to the reproduction of music. Yet, they constitute completely different devices for playing or replaying music. Musical automata may be regarded as forerunners of sound recording, and musical automata and sound recordings became competitors in the field of reproducing music, and sound recording won the race. Mechanical musical instruments proved to be a unique source for research into the historical performance of music, but they have themselves become valuable objects of research as well. And this is the point. Sound recordings are essential in the documentation and preservation of musical automata, and they are an indispensable tool for musicological research into mechanical music. My paper will have three chapters. The first one will outline the importance and the characteristics of musical automata as a source of music history. The second will deal with the recordings of mechanical instruments as a tool for research. And the third chapter will show you some examples of the musicological output. Chapter 1, the evaluation of musical automata. In order to understand the relevance of mechanical instruments, one must be aware of the fact that since the times of the Renaissance, musical automata have been widespread throughout all social classes to a surprisingly high extent. It is simply obvious that mechanical instruments are the only sounding legacy from the time before Edison invented the phonograph. This means that we can listen to the music as it sounded and as it was played 100 or 200 years ago. I can only repeat what David Fuller already said in 1979, quote, "These performances have the infinite advantage over all the carefully assembled reconstructions in the world of being real. What we hear in them could never be predicted by the cunning manipulation of any conceivable fund of data, because each event is the result of a personal decision made in response to a specific musical situation. End of quote. And even later, at the beginning of the 20th century, when sound recordings became established media, the music of mechanical instruments was superior to the acoustic playback of phonographs regarding the musical quality of performance and, of course, in respect to the quality of sound. But musical automata are not only a primary source in providing the original sound. There are two other aspects of outstanding musicological importance. With all those pinned barrels, discs, rolls, etc., these instruments keep the musical repertoire of their time, the music pieces which were favored then, the music which was fashionable. And this last point is noteworthy, as the mechanical instruments were objects of fashion themselves. They are paralleled by no other source in this respect. They did not only play the famous pieces, they keep in their musical repertoire many pieces which became highlights and hits for a very short time only, thus throwing light on the actual musical life of a special period, even of just one season, of a social class and on musical aesthetics. Sometimes mechanical instruments even prove to be the only existing source for musical pieces. And the other aspect is to be found with the musical performance of automata. On their barrels and rolls, musical automata preserve the historical interpretation of music, fixed and unchanged by the taste of later generations. Research has so far shown that all the transcriptions and arrangements made for mechanical instruments did not transfer a given score mechanically, but were made according to the musical taste and the actual musical interpretation as it was desired by the composers and executed by the musicians as it was common practice. And since it was usual to order the latest music for one's barrel organs, orchestrions, and musical boxes, we are now lucky to find some kind of authentic or at least historical performance of the music. Musical automata reveal rich and direct information on the contemporary performance, which cannot be given in this immediacy by the printed music or any other written material. Second chapter, recording the music of mechanical instruments. In 1980, the Phonographarchiv of the Austrian Academy of Sciences started a project on recording mechanical instruments. It began as a local project with the documentation of the automata of the Technical Museum in Vienna. Meanwhile, the activities have spread worldwide. This project opened up a field, a new field, as it turned out that musicology had so far neglected this source almost completely. Recording a mechanical instrument means making the music available without playing the valuable instruments again and again. The recordings serve as a basis for all future investigations into the music. It should be the aim of a documentation of mechanical instruments to record the entire musical repertoire associated with a specific instrument, so as to give a picture of the individual musical preferences of the former owners. This is essential for any observations concerning musical life within the different social classes and the use of music for different social purposes. There are two groups of musical automata. One group consists of instruments which have a barrel or any other carrier of the musical information fixed to them, or a series of barrels is distinctively associated with the instrument because they were made especially to the measures of the specific instrument. The other group of mechanical instruments plays carriers which were made independently of the instrument, a mass production of carriers fitting various types and a great number of instruments. With the first group of instruments, we find a musical repertoire which was made especially for the instrument. One can say that up to the mid-19th century, each customer individually ordered the music he or she wanted to play or hear on their automata. In this case, the repertoire displays the owner's personal taste. And once many repertoires have discovered, it is possible to draw your conclusions about the common taste of a certain period or of a social class. With the other group of instruments like disc music boxes, reed organs, orchestrions, violin playing machines, pianolas, etc., dating from a time where the manufacture of mechanical instruments had become an industry, the situation is different. The manufacturers published long lists of melodies available for their instruments, obviously trying to cater for any desire and musical taste. These catalogues are interesting as they list the music which was offered. But what actually counts is not which titles were listed, but which titles were bought by the customers to be played in their homes. The second aspect is that recordings preserve the music of mechanical instruments. The recordings safeguard the music irrespective of the further fate of the instrument. This is also the point. Mechanical instruments need permanent maintenance to uphold their playing quality. You will find such care with some special collections and private households, but rarely with public museums and certainly not with dealers, auction houses, and other places. Yet, there is in no case any guarantee that it will be possible to see an instrument for a second time. With dealers and auction houses, this is obvious. Private persons may sell their collections, but even state museums are not safe in this respect. Possibly, the objects will go to an exhibition and will come back ruined. Or they will be transferred to a depot where different parts are stored in different locations. All depending on the various preferences and views of directors and curators. From this, you can easily conclude that it can become impossible to trace even most prominent items. That the state of the automata may deteriorate, and I am not surprised if an instrument does not play anymore should I happen to see it again after some years. Having missed an opportunity to record an interesting musical automaton is one of the very sad experiences in this project. Another aspect is that making recordings of mechanical instruments does not only preserve the music, but forms an essential part of the documentation of the specific instrument together with photos, measurements, and other information about its construction. In this respect, videography adds considerably to complete the documentation. Videography is indispensable with musical automata which incorporate also activated figures and scenes. But also with the mechanical instrument itself, videography is important. It will show the handling of the instrument, the movements of the mechanical parts, their function in the process of playing the music. This can be of major interest when doing a transcription of the music, as one can follow the movements of keys or valves, for instance. I will come back to this in the examples later on. Back to the recordings of musical automata. Making recordings and using recordings for musicological research requires some critical considerations in respect to the mechanical instrument and the setting of the recording. First, one has to know about the authentic playing capabilities of historical automata. Unrestored or badly restored instruments will not be able to live up to the instrument's authentic performance quality. On the other hand, restored instruments may even play better than in their original status, as many historical constructions or parts of the mechanical devices are of poor and inferior quality, and ambitious restorers or clockmakers cannot resist upgrading and correcting obvious shortcomings. Of course, by doing that, they falsify the information of the historical source. Second, as to the sound of the instrument, one has to check out whether the sound characteristics of the musical instrument are authentic or may have changed over the time due to the age of the materials, the soundboard, the strings, and other components. For instance, the hammers, dampers, or plectra. Also former repairs, restorations, modifications may have caused considerable changes of the timbre of the musical instrument, resulting from a different voicing of pipes, different wind pressure, or the use of some other material, replacement of parts, changing of the gauge of strings, for instance. Not to speak of the pitch and the tuning of the instrument, which may have been altered in the course of time. And one has to bear in mind that we today hear in a different way than people 100 years ago. The sound environment has changed, our listening customs have changed, and we are used to hearing many other sounds which did not exist in former times. From this, we see that our perception will be different from that of people in the 19th or even 18th centuries. Third, the sound recording itself reveals and preserves certain characteristics which are the responsibility of the researcher who does the recording. Here, many questions arise and decisions have to be made. I just give some examples. There is quite a difference in the sound of a musical box closed or with open lid. A dismantled musical box movement will give a poor sound compared to a movement built into the base of a Biedermeier clock, which serves amazingly as a resonator. With big instruments like orchestrions, flute cabinets, and secretaires, the opening or closing of doors, writing boards, the removing of covers, and so on, will emphasize or dampen certain parts of the sound and the noise produced by the instrument. One has to be clear about what kind of sound should be obtained and how the musical automaton was heard in the historical setting. It makes a difference if you listen to a fairground organ on a marketplace or in a small exhibition room. And what about the delicate sound of tiny musical snuff boxes, watches, and pieces of jewelry? Actually, you will only be able to appreciate their sound by holding them close to your ear. How to make and play back a recording adequately with this kind of automata? Just one remark, short remark, concerning the noise of the playing mechanism. The noise is part of the sound and should not be eliminated. Thus, any recording should offer an acceptable balance between the music and the noise produced by the gear and the mechanism. The third chapter, I will present four examples of musicologically relevant observations. The first example will deal with authentic tempo and phrasing, the second with historical interpretations and changes of melodic lines, the third and the fourth with a mechanical instrument as the only source of the music of a musical piece. The first example. I came across a Viennese flute secretaire with 42 flutes and a collection of 8 barrels in the monastery of Lilienfeld in Lower Austria. The instrument comes from the workshop of Anton Bayer in Vienna, and luckily there is an inscription on the bellows from the hand of a bellow maker, Josef Hein, stating the year when it was made, 1818. There's a closer look of the instrument inside. One of the barrels is pinned with Beethoven's Egmont Overture. Beethoven completed his music for Egmont in 1810. Hence, the performance of the flute secretaire comes from Beethoven's time. The Egmont Overture has a playing duration about 7 to 8 minutes and consists of 3 parts: sostenuto ma non troppo, allegro, and allegro con brio. The overture had to be shortened in order to fit onto the barrel, which plays 3.5 minutes. It is important to point out that all the necessary abbreviations were done only within the allegro and the allegro con brio. The flute secretaire plays the entire sostenuto ma non troppo. That's the beginning of the overture. I would like to concentrate on this part. The big surprise is the tempo. The Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, under the direction of Herbert von Karajan, plays this section in 2 minutes and 19 seconds. The flute secretaire needs only 1 minute and 5 seconds. But this much faster tempo is absolutely understandable. The measure of this part is given with 3 halves, which means that you should get the feeling of 3 beats per bar. The tempo indication means sustained, restrained, but not too much. These characteristics become apparent with the performance of the flute secretaire, certainly not with Karajan's interpretation, which more or less could be a grave or largo. And there are 2 other reasons. I doubt that the buyer of this expensive flute cabinet who ordered this music would have been happy with the opening of the overture twice as fast as he was used to hear it. And there exists another flute clock built into a writing desk from about 1850, which also plays Beethoven's Egmont Overture. The arrangement is different, but it too plays the entire sostenuto ma non troppo, and it takes 59 seconds to play this part. I would like now to play this opening in the interpretation of Karajan with the Philharmonic Orchestra of Berlin.
Thank you.
the music, played by the flute secretaire, Vienna, 1818. Apart from this, I would like to draw your attention to some detail concerning the phrasing of the passage. The bars 35 to 42 show a different articulation. While the orchestra plays the slurs as printed in the score, the continuous line, the flute secretaire plays a phrasing as indicated by the dotted slurs and the short quarter notes marked by the staccato dots. You may notice this when I continue playing the music by the flute secretaire. And so on. Example number two. The next demonstration throws some light on how contemporary arrangers interfered with the design and structure of a melodic line. As an example, out of many others, I represent a musical box made by Franz Rebicek in Prague. According to the number of this music box, it comes from the year 1858 or 1859, and it plays the waltz Viennese Children by Joseph Strauss, his opus 61, which was published in 1858. I will compare what is actually played with the original piano edition from 1858. The arrangement on the cylinder consists only of the first and second waltz played without any repetition to fit into the limited playing time of 50 seconds. In the first part of the first waltz, the melody has been changed in bars 3, 5, 11, and 13. Bars 3 and 11 introduce some rhythmical variant in comparison to bars 1 and 9, and in bars 5 and 15, the arrangement changes the original repetition of the note A into a melodic movement. In the second part, bar 21 shows a slightly different version. In the second part of the second waltz, we find major changes. The original score shows a theme of an overall descending line consisting of four measures. These four measures are bound together especially by the hemiole between bar 2 and 3, giving the whole theme a somehow quiet flowing nature. The arrangement on the music box destroys this construction. The hemiole is broken up, the melody jumps up an octave higher, the bar 3 takes up the rhythmic pattern of bar 1, emphasizing the 1 again. What we get are two groups, each of 2 bars length and of contrasting pitch level. The character of the 4-bar melody has been changed into a vivid counterplay of 2-bar motifs. Bar 34 shows some marginal alteration. I would like to play this also for you. Example number 3. The Clock Museum in Vienna holds a flute clock made by Johann Joseph Wiest, coming from around 1800. According to the available sources, as its earliest from 1796, there exists an accompanying letter from one of the pre-owners, dated 1895, saying that the second piece on the barrel is Mozart's famous Andante Köchel 616. I wanted to verify this statement because this would mean that this instrument would be the only historical automaton having this piece on its barrel. As the flute clock did not play at all, I was not able to listen to the music, but I tried to do a transcription of the music from the pins of the barrel. This transcription already brought to light that only the first 4 bars show some similarities too, and a vaguely reminiscent of Mozart's Köchel 616, but the rest resembles a completely unknown continuation. 1 year later, the flute clock underwent a restoration and I made a recording of the music. The remaining 7 tunes turned out to be well-known pieces by Haydn, but this is a different story. Of course, the sound recording helped very much to improve my first transcription of the Mozart piece, but several phrases and passages remained unclear. Meanwhile, the instrument had been incorporated into its cabinet again, and the mechanism and the barrel were and are no longer available for further inspection. But we had taken a video of all the tunes. This video clearly shows that the movement of the keys while the barrel is revolving. This, and it becomes visible which note is played and for how long. You can follow the motion of each key, its raising and falling back, give you the information when the associated valve is opened and closed and the corresponding tone is sounded. Finally, I was able to produce this transcription. With its 4 initial bars reminding us of Mozart's Köchel 616, this instrument is a unique source. It keeps the only traces of Mozart's works for automata preserved on a historical barrel. Thank you. I will play the video after the presentation for some technical reasons. So I come to the last and the fourth example. The museum in the castle of Ettlingen near Karlsruhe, you see its beautiful Baroque facade, keeps a Welte. What's now?
That's the video problem.
Yeah, that's the video problem. Start it again. I can go on with my text meanwhile. This is of course, no problem. This museum keeps Welte Concert Orchestra number 4, made in 1895, playing 10 ranks of pipes, all in all 238 pipes, plus drums, cymbals, and triangle. This is the instrument. There are two swells in the roof and of this huge cabinet. To this instrument belongs a rich collection of 91 rows. The musical repertoire consists mainly of operatic tunes and overtures, but it includes also some special music like quadrilles by Strauss, the first two movements of Mozart's Requiem, and several character pieces. Out of these, one piece attracted my attention. Its title is Orchestrion Soloist, a polka by an unknown composer named Franz. That's the role. The title suggests rather strongly that it could be a composition especially made for the orchestra displaying several sound capabilities of the instrument based on a rather simple and trivial musical concept. But this critical comment aside, one has to bear in mind that for orchestrions around 1900, no original music was written, and if you look into the lists of available music, only arrangements were offered. From this point of view, the orchestrion soloist deserves some special considerations. I would like to play some bars of this composition.
Thank you.
so on and so forth. And now I would like to bring you and show you the video of this flute clock from around 1800 playing the Mozart piece, please. It has also some audio. But you may see how the pins activate the keys, and from this I could read which tones were played. And so a multiple singing is not my specialty. That's not the music associated with this instrument. That would be very easy to transcribe. Not this one. So, just for information.
Slow.
I think you saw what I meant and how this video helped essentially with transcribing.
I might be back later with it.
It's an employment movement.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Helmut. This just makes me wonder if, say, 300 years from now, some group will be dedicated to creating or restoring PowerPoint presentations to their original functionality. It would be very easy to do that. I'm pretty sure they'll be working in 300 years just as they are today.
It would be a lot easier if they had overhead slides. Yeah, then you'd have to flip the slide.
Ready?
Absolutely. No, it's